You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hello and welcome to the On The Money podcast. It's Friday the 24th of October. I'm Stephanie Youssef, filling in for Ricardo Gonçalves. Today, the ASX closed 0.15% lower. I'll have a bit more on that and what the markets are expecting ahead of next week's CPI figures a little later. But first, new research from the superannuation peak body ASFA shows fewer Australians are now relying on the pension to fund their retirement, with the average super fund passing $172,000 for the first time. For more on this, I spoke with ASFA CEO Mary Delahunty.
These recent stats are really a combination of three things coming together. Most importantly, this is the super system doing exactly what it was meant to do. Firstly, we've had strong investment returns. So super funds have delivered between 9 and 10% over the last three financial years on default options. Quite extraordinary. Secondly, the super guarantee is finally reaching 12%. So remember, it started at 3% in 1992. It was stuck at 9% for years, and it's really reaching a number that represents maturity now. And third, the system itself is maturing. So now I've got workers who've been contributing for 30 plus years. The result is that the super system has generated around $1 trillion in additional household savings that Australians wouldn't otherwise have. And this isn't luck. This is the system working exactly as it was supposed to.
Fewer Australians are relying on the age pension now. What does this say about how far this retirement system has come and what will it look like in the future?
This fewer people relying on the age pension is actually the historic shift we've been hoping for. Super is increasingly becoming the main source of retirement income rather than the age pension. So a 30-year-old today with $30,000 in super and earning a median wage, they will retire with $610,000. That's above $595,000 needed for a comfortable retirement. So it really is an incredible effort from a system and something that the country should be very proud of.
Big differences in super balances across the country. What's behind those regional gaps?
The regional gaps come down to two main factors, who lives where and what they earn. Super's a reflection of your working life. So mining towns like Newcastle have average balances around $199,000 because mining pays well, so higher super contributions. Coastal towns like Victor Harbour, they also have higher balances, but for different reasons. They're the retirement destinations full of people who've accumulated super over early careers. And then younger towns like Darwin have lower average balances because younger workers haven't had time to build up their balances yet. Even in Sydney, so even in city capitals, the variations are huge, from $378,000 in the likes of Wentworth down to $75,000 in Blaxland. So those differences reflect income levels and the reality of how different communities age and earn.
The research shows that the gender gap is shrinking, but what's still holding back women from catching up completely?
The good news is that women now hold 43.6% of super assets, up from 41.9% 5 years ago. So we're heading in the right direction, albeit at a glacial pace. But gaps remain because at ages 60 to 64, men average about 396,000, while women average around 313,000. Obviously, there are a few drivers, the main culprits being career breaks for caring responsibilities, and then women tending to work part-time, and then women being paid lower. So it's a wicked problem, but recent changes are making real differences. So superannuation on paid parental leave is coming. We've abolished the $450 monthly threshold that excluded many part-time workers, and the Listo tax offset is expanding to cover workers. We know that those statistics, women are overrepresented in those groups. They will make meaningful differences, and now we just have to keep attacking the drivers of that gap.
There's been a lot of discussion recently about economic uncertainty. Super balances are at record highs. How confident can Australians be that those savings are safe if markets take a downturn?
It's certainly volatile times, but superannuation is a long-term investment. It's built to weather short-term storms. So markets will go up and down, but think about your investment over the 30 years. Superannuation funds have delivered average returns of about 7.5% year on year, even accounting for the GFC and the COVID crashes. So the key is that younger workers actually can benefit from downturns because they can buy assets when they're cheap. Super can act really counter-cyclical that way. their regular contributions take advantage of what we call dollar cost averaging over time. So for those closer to retirement, most funds automatically dial down the risk as you age. Remember also that super funds are heavily regulated, so they're professionally managed and diversified across thousands of investments globally. Your super isn't sitting in one stock or one property, spread across the global economy.
This research also shows younger people are on track for stronger retirements. What advice would you give to people just starting out with super?
The most important thing you can do for your retirement is, no matter what age you are, engage with your super early. Don't wait until you're 50. And it can be achingly boring if you're young to think about retiring, but you can make some meaningful differences. Make sure you have one account. 78% of Australians now just have one, which is great, but check you're not paying fees on multiple accounts if you don't want to be. Check your insurance, because you may need insurance at some point in time. It's a good way to get insurance through your super, but you might be paying for cover that you don't need, or you might not have enough. And then consider extra contributions if you can. For many people, even $20 a week in their 20s can mean tens of thousands extra at retirement thanks to compound returns. Check your investment option matches your risk profile. And then you can do that in a step-by-step sort of way. And then you've taken some real actions towards making sure you've got a good balance at retirement for dignity as you stop work.
That was ASFA CEO Mary Delahunty. Now to the Australian share market, which fell 0.15% to 9,019 points. Despite that, six of the 11 sectors finished in the black, led by information technology stocks. For more on what drove the market today, including how investors are feeling ahead of Donald Trump's meeting with Xi Jinping next week, I spoke with ANZ's head of FX research, Mahjabeen Zaman. The ASX is in the red after a rise in early trading. What's driving the market today?
Look, I think US-China relations once again are taking center stage in financial markets ahead of several critical dates. We saw this morning that President Trump and Xi seem to have confirmed a meeting to take place sometime next week. At the margin, you could think that's kind of positive. But then, you know, I think as, you know, the multiple headlines around Trump and his dealings with other countries breaking apart. We saw another headline around Canada that seems to have fallen in terms of tariff negotiations. I think that's a push and pull that's driving markets. At the end of the day, when Trump and Xi meet next week, now that summit, the APEC summit, precedes the November 10th deadline, marking the end of the current 90-day truce on tariffs for US and China. So if there is no, you know, deal or no extension of that, you know, you're going to see US tariffs on Chinese goods back to 145%, reigniting trade tensions.
So everyone's looking forward to next week's CPI figures, which could influence the RBA's next move. What's the market expecting?
Look, we are expecting trimmed mean inflation of 0.9% Q-on-Q, headline inflation of 1.2% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Now, of course, our trimmed mean outcome does have some upside risk. But if we do get that 0.9% Q-on-Q, this would really mean that the two-quarter trimmed mean pulse will analyze around or marginally even above the top of the RBA's 2-3% target band. Now, we think that if that's the real outcome that we do get next week, this will prevent the RBA from easing rates in November. Now, the September labor force data and the increase in unemployment rate to 4.5% at the margin does complicate the picture ahead for the RBA's meeting. But then, you know, when we look at the pickup in consumer spending, faster pace of GDP growth than was the case a year ago, we think that no move in November is likely and a final easing in September is the most likely outcome if the CPI prints as we expect.
Investors are also bracing for US CPI figures that are coming out tonight, despite the government shutdown. It could provide some hints about the US interest rate path and provide Wall Street with a bit of a boost. What are the expectations there?
Look, the CPI marks the only major data point ahead of next week's Fed decision, given the shutdown. Now, the data is being released during the shutdown to facilitate the annual cost of living adjustment for For social security payments, we estimate core CPI to be at 0.28% month on month for September, which would leave the year-on-year rate unchanged at about 3.1%. Now, this is likely on the back of, elevated food prices, higher petrol prices, which will likely see headline inflation a little bit higher at the margin. Our central scenario for core services ex rent, which really is known as the super core inflation, is for it to continue on a deflationary path owing to easing wages growth and cooling labor market conditions. Now, tariffs are likely going to continue to impact core goods prices in the coming month, but there is elevated uncertainty around the timing and the extent of this impact. On the Fed, we do expect a 25 basis points cut this at the end of next week at the FOMC meeting. And we also expect an announcement around when the quantitative tightening will end. We expect Chair Powell to remain cautious and kind of signal a little bit of that meeting-by-meeting approach to future rate cuts to balance concerns around the softness in hiring that we have seen against, somewhat elevated inflation uncertainty. Overall, we expect the FOMC to cut another time in December and followed by two additional cuts in 2026.
And gold had a huge sell-off this week, ending weeks of continued gains. Do you think we've hit the peak with gold, or do fundamentals remain solid?
Look, gold prices retraced sharply after over a 20-plus percent rally since September. A little bit of, you could argue, headline risks around the commentary between US versus the rest of the world. Some positives, some negatives there. And also broadly, you would see some investors maybe taking money off the table there. But ETF holdings, of course, fell quite sharply. Furthermore, we see a little bit of the US dollar strength coming back in, which has also then weighed on the gold price as well. We think that this price fall is more of a healthy correction than a new reversal of the uptrend. We do see the structural factors are still supportive, such as US macroeconomic challenges. They still look like they're intensifying. There's no evidence that the government shutdown is going to end anytime soon. The longer that drags on, the greater the risk to U.S. economic activity. In addition to that, as I spoke about earlier, we expect the Fed to ease rates over the next few meetings. And at the margin, this will be supportive for gold. Physical demand also remains pretty strong despite the price rise. We saw Swiss gold exports rising by 38% month on month in September.
That was Mahshabeen Zaman, Head of FX Research at ANZ. That's all for today. Thank you for joining me. Ricardo will be back next week.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.